я сварав у суп'єрі, суп'як м'ёс кару.
You're tuned to 3CR, 8:55 AM, 3CR digital and streaming at 3cr.org.au. The recordings we're bringing you today is the second of a two-part special featuring the speeches from the Climate Crisis and War Rally held on Saturday 21st of September in Federation Square on the unceded lands of the Wurundjeri and Bunurong. The rally was organised by the Independent and Peaceful Australia Network to mark the UN International Day of Peace with a call for no Australian support for US wars and highlighting the links between the military-industrial complex and the climate crisis. Today we'll hear from Alexia Fuentes from Migrante in the Philippines, O'Neill Waromi, Free West Papua student activist, Patrick Newbold from the Spirit of Eureka, and Len Cooper from the International League of People's Struggle, followed by Bryden Nichols from the Monash University Worker Student Alliance. The MC is Kevin Bracken from the Maritime Union of Australia.
People might not know, but we're the second largest military supporter to the Philippines. And our next speaker, Alexia Fuentes, is going to speak about that. Put your hands together for Alexia.
Today is September 21st, International Day of Peace or Peace Day. I have to ask though, do we live in a peaceful society? Do we live in a peaceful world? We are all peaceful people. We all yearn for peace. It is the aspiration of every peaceful loving peoples and nations. But what does turning away refugees who come here to escape war and poverty, aspiring for peace, tell us? What does this tell us? To many of us here today, including the ones who came here to escape the ravages of the Second World War, we've been lucky enough. And to those who came here because they simply had the means to start a new life, even luckier. Many of you probably feel unaffected by the present situation. I was one of the lucky Filipino migrants who made it here. But many of my fellow brethren and countrymen who have also made it here live in far different circumstances than I. They work in farms in regional Victoria. They work in scrupulous conditions and precarious jobs with dodgy employers and dodgy pay. Jobs that they usually wouldn't give average Australians. They try to pit a foreign labour force against everyday working Australians. We are exploited because we are the cheaper and more dispensable force. We have been made this way by years of neoliberal and imperialist onslaught on our economy and national sovereignty. It's on an historical magnitude. But why are we here? Why am I here? Well, that's because of neoliberal policies like the labour export policy. Let me repeat that. Labour export policy crafted in the Philippines. Because of extreme poverty and rising unemployment. Because of the massive human rights violations and state-sponsored killings under the fascist and tyrannical Duterte regime in the Philippines. And because there is still martial law in Mindanao, the southern island of the Philippines, and quite frankly, a de facto dictatorship all over the country. And likewise, it is because of neoliberal schemes here in Australia, such as the 457 visa, demanding for a foreign labor force in this country. And it's also because of US and also Australian military presence in the Philippines. That's right. Both the US and Australia give military aid and weapons to the fascist Duterte regime, which is killing Filipinos and committing gross human rights violations. Military aid and weapons, which are being used in Duterte's war on drugs and all at war against communists, human rights defenders, and union leaders. Apart from all this, we have large destructive mining companies like OceanaGold that has open pit mines in the Philippines. Filipinos are left with barren lands, our forests stripped, and our rivers polluted. The same thing that they're doing here with Adani. Meanwhile, Filipino workers are being sold like commodities to industrialized nations, and they say it's due to a lack of skilled workers in the US, Canada, Europe, and Australia. But the truth is that they want to take advantage of our destitution and your, they want to replace unionized workers like you here with cheaper labor. At the same time, my friends, you are also exploited by the same people. Are these working conditions a conducive environment for a peaceful and democratic society? I tell you, no, it is not. What might happen then if all the workers of the world unite? What a world it would be, comrades. We've kicked out US bases in the Philippines before in 1991. You can kick them out of Australia too. The problem, though, is that there are still US troops, and now Australian troops as well, who have found a way to use Philippine military bases for themselves through the Visiting Forces Agreement and the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement. We will kick them out too. That is why we are answering the call and are likewise calling out to all of you today present in this gathering. Build the popular united front. Long live the broad mass movement of the people. And if we really want to demand peace, say it with me. No to US and Australian support for wars. No more wars. No more wars. No more wars. Thank you.
Well done, Alexis. Thanks very much. And the Philippines is disgraceful. Australian troops are over there teaching the Philippine army in door-to-door combat. And it's not being used against all this bullshit about a war on drugs. It's a war on poor people and a war on anyone who stands up to Duterte and his cronies. Our next speaker, and they're talking about people who stand up, is from West Papua, O'Neill Waromi. And unfortunately, we've been silent about this, what's going on to the West Papuans and what's being done to them by the Indonesians. What's happening up in the Freeport McMoran mine in West Papua is disgraceful. I was talking to a bloke whose brother works in Papua New Guinea. He said he was in the bar 3 weeks ago and he was having a talk with another Australian. He says, "How you going?" He says, "Shit house." He goes, "What's up?" He goes, "He works at the Freeport mine." He said, "We had four people coming up, complain about their wages or they didn't get their overtime or whatever." He said that a security, "Can you go and see what they're doing?" He heard bang, 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 bang. And that was it. That's their deal of worker complaints. It's a disgraceful what's going on there, and they've been there for a long time. It was one of the richest gold mines in the world, and a part of the reason why the Americans got rid of Sukarno and put Suharto in there, a puppet for the US. And I'd like to hand over to our next speaker, O'Neill Waromi.
Thanks, O'Neill. Thank you. Maikai, everyone. I'd like to acknowledge traditional custodians of this land. Always will be our Aboriginal land. My name is O'Neill. I'm West Papuan Students Activist, currently doing a master's degree in international community development. You all have seen the media reports of the last weeks showing a horrific human rights abuse in West Papua. Not just of people in West Papua, but also the university students and other West Papuan students who live in Indonesia outside West Papuan Island. As a West Papuan postgraduate student in Australia, I'm asking your help on behalf of many West Papuans who are suffering, the ordinary people, the villages, the people who get shot, tortured, forced to flee from their village simply because of wanting to achieve self-determination of our own country. Suddenly, the international community is becoming aware of what's happening in West Papua that already been happening for a very long time. Independence for West Papua seemed close when the Dutch left the East Indies, but instead, 27 years ago, on this very day, today, 21st September in 1962, West Papua made a United Nations Trust Territory, where the UN assumed responsibility for interests and welfare of my people. Independence still seemed within reach. The UN promised an eventual free and fair act of self-determination for the West Papuans. However, in 1960s, so-called act of free choice was needed, fair or not free. The Indonesian military selected and isolated 1,025 West Papuan men from the whole populations of the country and compelled them to vote for integration with Indonesia. This result was accepted by the United Nations with the encouragement of Australia and the United States, which then, as now, were keen to support the Indonesian genocide, the West Papuan genocide by Indonesia. Recently, violence against Papuans at home and elsewhere in Indonesia has escalated very substantially. I won't go into details, as you will have seen some of it on your screen and social media, about how they torture my people, West Papuan people. A day ago, a baby was shot to death in the mother's arms, and her 10-year-old son shot dead beside her. Abuse is not just physical. West Papuans are subjected to the most hurtful and personal verbal abuse, comparing us to the animals, ridiculing our dark skin and frizzy hair, and we are Melanesians, full stop. Very different culturally and physically from Indonesian people. The country is one half a huge Melanesian island. The other half is the independent state of Papua New Guinea. It's independent like almost every other Pacific nations. Where the colonial masters have been long withdrawn, our Pacific brothers and sisters have their independence. They are supporting us in our struggles. And yeah, I want all of us to invite more Australian community to know on how they can get involved. Because it's taxpayers' money that fueling the genocide in West Papua. We want an end to shooting, the torture, the personal humiliation. We want a genuine chance to choose our future. We want to be custodians of our own land and our benefit directly to our own resources, which is very considerable. The Freeport mines, the most productive gold mine in the world. There's also oil and massive deposit of copper. As well, large-scale economic development is taking place across West Papua from logging, agricultural plantations, and gas extractions, vast areas of land taken with little or no compensation at all to West Papuan indigenous people. West Papuans are fast becoming a minority in our own country. People from Jaffa are relocated to West Papua, given the land to settle down. Our culture becomes strange to us. But in this scale of this transmigration, it's a deliberate move to overwhelm positions, overwhelm us. And senior positions are mostly held by Indonesian, not West Papuans, in all big mining and gas corporate company in West Papua. Business and economic activities are dominated by migrants. Education and health services are very poor in most regions in West Papua. The West Papuan are the poorest of the poorest, are the less educated and most unhealthy populations in all of Indonesia. What is happening in West Papua is referred as a slow motion genocide. Help us, please. There are numbers of ways of Australian government to help the West Papuan people. We can call the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Australia Marie Spain, to abolish the Lombok Treaty, because that's what stopping Australia to send a UN peacekeeping mission to go across the border to West Papua to help West Papuan people. And also there are many ways Australian can help West Papua. A very effective way is through your politicians. Write or visit your local members requesting that they raise an urgent concern of West Papua below with the Australian Department of Foreign Minister and Attorney General Office. Very importantly, we are calling the Australian Minister of Defence to bring about an immediate end to training Indonesian soldier in Australia. If it is these people who comprise the militia which patrol West Papua and intimidate and injured my people, West Papuan people. As individuals, Australians can keep themselves well informed on West Papua. We need to read, watch and listen and aware about what's happening in West Papua because we are your closest neighbor. Go to the frequent talks and seminars being held at the present and become familiar with West Papuan recent history and the fact that we West Papuan people, we speak with us, within ourselves. For me, as a West Papuan, in West Papuan community, we are low in number outside of West Papua. In Australia, we're just less than 100. How can we organize, mobilize community to build an effective campaign with us in here being treated as a second-class citizen, migrants or refugee? So for me, it's a call out for all of us. Whatever you can contribute to support our West Papuan struggle, West Papuan campaign, please do it. Call the petitions with the union, work on the boycott campaign, because we can just leave people die every single day and do business as usual. This is a plight for me as a West Papuan community and as a student, as a migrant, as a refugee. Please, we need to work together as one community. Thank you.
Good on you, O'Neill. Well done, mate, and it's very tough. The West Papuans are doing it tough, and it's disgraceful. The Australian government's done nothing about it. We all have to be more active. And there's a petition to sign, which was brought up to the United Nations.
You're tuned to 3CR, and we're bringing you speeches from the Climate Crisis and War Rally held on Saturday, 21st of September. We just heard from O'Neill Waromi, and before him, Alexia Fuentes. Up next, Patrick Newbold, followed by Len Cooper and Bryda Nichols.
But we also see a Venezuelan flag here. And the reason why we got the Venezuelan flag here is because last week, I'm a rank and file MUA member, and I went to the Victorian Trades All Council and we passed a resolution condemning the sanctions that have been put on Venezuela by the United States. Venezuela has been locked out the entire banking system. They cannot buy anything, including medicines, including food, including equipment, because the US has put a sanction, but it's an economic warfare carried out against Venezuela. The Venezuelan government's, every time you hear the news people in Australia talking about Venezuela, they say, oh, it's failed socialism. There's $57 million belonging to Venezuela that is held up in international banks that they won't release. They now recognise Juan Guaido, a fellow who swore himself in at a rally not much bigger than this, as the president of Venezuela. They don't recognise Maduro, who was elected by 67% of the Venezuelan people to run their country. And the reason why they don't like Venezuela, because Venezuela used to be like a lot of the rest of Central and South America. It was used, it had puppets in there, and they were selling their resources for a song, giving them away. They were taking 1% royalties out of their oil supply. And Venezuela has the largest oil supply in the world, much larger than Saudi Arabia. They used to take 1% royalties. Hugo Chavez was elected in 98, and he lifted up to 30%. When he was elected, 70% of the Venezuelan people were living in extreme poverty. By 2012, they were down to 20%, only 20% of the people. He'd increased from 5 universities to 13 universities. Venezuela still has the 5th largest attendance rate in universities in the world. And what he was doing was educating people, and we're building homes for people. 2.5 million homes were built for poor people, and anyone who wanted land could have land as well. And the US doesn't like anyone standing up for that. They tried to get rid of Chavez in 2002. They had a coup, but they were unsuccessful about it because they had mass support from 2 million people who surrounded Miraflores Palace. The US put in the head of the Business Council of Venezuela to run Venezuela and said that Chavez's flown away, he's resigned, and now the head of their business council is the head of Venezuela. 2 million people surrounded the Miraflores Palace, and because Chavez had known about it, he had these battalion of paratroopers in the back, so they got him out the basement, and they said, you might be sitting in a chair, but you're not the president, get him back here. And it was unsuccessful. Now they've had two attempted coups by Juan Guaido. He's got no support from the Venezuelan people, no support from the military, and the people in there have stuck fat with their president who's over there. There was a study done in April this year that's in the US by academics that said 40,000 people had been killed by these sanctions then, and there were 300,000 at risk. So I'm very proud that the Victorian Trades Hall Council condemned that. And I'd just like to pass on to our next speaker, Patrick Newbold, one of our fine young members from Spirit of Eureka. Put your hands together.
Thanks, Kim. G'day, I'd like to begin by acknowledging that we meet on the stolen lands of the Wurundjeri people. Acknowledge that their country was never ceded and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. The recent provocations against Iran are the latest in a series of efforts by the United States to establish a pretext for further military intervention in the Middle East. Despite a history of disastrous campaigns in the region, such as in Iraq and in Libya, which saw massive civilian casualties, the decimation of vital infrastructure, a deepening of major sectarian conflicts, and a catastrophic breakdown in social and political stability, the United States remains unrelenting in its pursuit of further conflict. The drive for conflict with Iran follows an ongoing deterioration of diplomatic ties and the reinstatement of harsh sanctions by the US in an attempt to cut off supplies of Iranian crude oil to an already oversupplied world market. The economic factors behind this unfolding conflict have not been left out of mainstream coverage of the events. However, they have typically been woven into the narrative in such a way as to imply that the United States is averse to the notion of a war with Iran, that it fears the possibility of a rise in oil prices. The Strait of Hormuz, which has formed the backdrop for many of these recent escalations, is a critical strategic location in the world energy market. Almost a third of the world's liquefied natural gas passes through this narrow strip of ocean, along with a quarter of the world's oil. The United States has sought to justify its intervention in the region on the grounds that it is seeking to secure the waterway in order to ensure navigational freedom and to prevent a crisis that would potentially see oil prices skyrocket. This follows a series of recent attacks on oil tankers in the region, for which key members of the Trump administration have launched a string of unsubstantiated allegations toward Iran in a brazenly undiplomatic and escalatory move. If we are expected to believe that the United States is prepared to ignite yet another significant conflict in the Middle East for the purpose of keeping oil prices low, then we should ask ourselves why Iranian and Venezuelan oil remains tightly under US sanctions, restricting supply and raising prices. Surely, if the United States government was acting in the pursuit of lower oil prices, then they would lift these sanctions, releasing this oil onto the market and bringing prices down. If this pretext was legitimate, why would the US be seeking to further inflame the crisis by deploying troops and warships to the region, increasing the chances of a major conflict and thus raising oil prices? Of course, the reason is that the multi-billion dollar oil cartels which set the foreign policy agenda for the United States have absolutely no interest in lower oil prices. Rather, it is their pursuit of higher oil prices and greater market control that is behind the tough sanctions against Iran and Venezuela and the relentless drive to exacerbate the prospects for war in a region so critical to the world's energy market. The recent crisis in the Strait of Hormuz follows reports by the International Energy Agency that booming oil production has culminated in an oversupply of the world's energy market, leading prices to fall over the past year in a trend which is expected to continue, hurting corporate profits and the value of their stock and shares. If the situation in the Strait of Hormuz continues to escalate toward a full-scale conflict, it would prove extremely disruptive to the production and transport of oil in the region, which, under the conditions of an oversupplied market, would serve to reduce supply, raise prices, and boost profits. It would also enable the United States to pursue its long-held desire to facilitate regime change in Iran, with the ultimate goal of bringing the nation's now state-owned oil and gas companies, as well as other key state-owned infrastructure, under the control of private US-based multinationals. The working people of the world have absolutely no interest in supporting these recent acts of aggression and provocation towards Iran by the United States. These desperate contrivances to goad Iran into a major conflict represent nothing more than a frantic attempt by a contingent of wealthy industrialists and financiers to stave off a crisis of overproduction in the world energy market. We must not be content to turn a blind eye to their crimes. We must condemn the Australian government's complicity in US provocations toward Iran and renew our calls for an independent foreign policy, one that is not beholden to any big power, but which can legitimately be said to serve the interests of the masses of people in this country and the world. We must adopt an independent working class agenda in the struggle against imperialist domination domestically and abroad, and to build hope for a better, brighter and a more peaceful future for this world. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Patrick. And it's fantastic to hear young people speaking about that. And I'm a member of the Spirit of Eureka too, and we hold the Spirit of Eureka as a fantastic moment in Australian history where people stood together supporting each other and took action against an injustice. And that's what we desperately need in this country now. Our next speaker is from the International League of People Struggle and also used to be the Secretary of the Communications Workers Union. Put your hands together for Len Cooper.
Friends, I bring you greetings from the International League of People Struggles, ILPS, on September the 21st, a day declared by the United Nations as International Day of Peace. My organisation, the ILPS, is an international coalition of grassroots people's organisations who are active in common struggles around the world against poverty and exploitation, for justice, for peace, for democratic rights, for human rights, for national sovereignty, for protection of the environment and a better life for the people of Australia and the world. The ILPS wishes to endorse and give full support to this protest, organised by the Independent and Peaceful Australian Network. And the theme for this year's United Nations, as speakers have said, on the International Day of Peace is Climate Action for Peace, which is aimed at drawing attention to the importance of combating climate change as part of the struggle to promote a peaceful world. We wish to publicly endorse the magnificent student-led climate strikes taking place in Melbourne and across the globe, starting in a new phase yesterday. What do the people of the world face today? They face the continuing threat of global war by the big world powers. This is underlined by the aggression, the threats, and the invasions of independent nations and countries by the overthrow or attempted overthrow of independent governments such as Libya, Haiti, Venezuela, Cuba, Syria and Yemen, the occupation of Palestinian people's land, the threats against Iran and North Korea, etc. And all these are a result of the drive by the United States imperialists' desire to control oil and gas supplies, to control cheap labour, to dominate strategic parts of the world, and to dominate the globe in order to turn their profits into even more super profits. We face the growing tension, threats of war and even nuclear war by struggle and contention between the big powers, the US, the Russia and China. Again, this threat is a result of the big powers manoeuvring to control the world in their own self-interest, with the US imperial objective to remain the number one superpower and the number one super profit maker. The so-called global market economy and its profit motive are at the roots of the global aggression, invasion, war, plunder and domination. And so it is with the global climate emergency. What do we see? Unpredictable wildfires, ice sheets melting, sweltering heat waves, dried up lakes and much more. The fossil fuel industry are responsible for 71% of carbon emissions in the world. We've seen the earliest start to the bushfire season in Australia's history. In 2019, we saw the hottest July and Alaska's ice sheet melting and record thaws in the Arctic and more. The face of global war threats, nuclear threats and global warming threats, we see, what response do we see from our politicians to these things? We witness our pathetic Prime Minister in the US right now seeking to get his pat on the back as a good mate from the chieftain of the US imperialism and going all the way with Trump down the road of global destruction to satisfy the profit drive of the big US corporations. Only the world's people, united, can solve these massive problems. The world's people must unite to change the course of the world. Whilst the biggest profiteers and their pathetic politicians remain in charge, the problem of the world's people cannot be resolved and the threats will remain. The people must continue to develop their own demands. They must get out on the streets in bigger and bigger numbers, and they must build a movement for change that is impossible to stop. The people will need to liberate themselves from corporate control and corporate greed. We need to ensure that people-oriented policies and programs are implemented, and we cannot any longer tolerate the policies and programs of the 1% at the top, the rich, the greedy, and the selfish. We want peace and social justice. We oppose peerless wars of aggression, and we demand the destruction and outlawing of weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear weapons. The unity of the world's people is the key to this struggle. And in the spirit of that unity, I just wanted to mention the need for more support, as has already been indicated, for the West Papuan people for their independence. And I wanted to mention the struggles, the support for the struggles of the Filipino people against the US Duterte fascist regime in the Philippines. Long live international solidarity and long live the people's opposition to war, injustice and environmental destruction. Thank you.
Good on you, Len. And that's it. We're in solidarity with the people who are struggling for a better world too. And it's great to see young people struggling for a better world, for aspirations to be better, because we can be much better than what we are now. And our next speaker is Bryda Nichols from the Monash University Worker Student Alliance. Good on you, Bryda. Put your hands together.
G'day, comrades. My name's Bryda. Firstly, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners on the land of which we're gathered here today and pay my respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. So I'm a proud Palawa woman from Tasmania, and I think it's important to acknowledge that this land was stolen and never ceded. So today is the UN International Day of Peace. One of our demands here today is for so-called Australia to stop backing US wars, and we're calling for peace. Now, shamefully, there are many barriers to peace. How can we aim for peaceful Australian foreign policy when this country refuses to acknowledge its genocidal past? I'd like to tell you about my ancestor, Malinagena. He was a chief in Tasmania during what's known as the Black War, but it wasn't a war, it was actually a genocide. So he resisted, like many other Indigenous Tasmanians, and our community was nearly obliterated during that struggle. And we've been fighting for recognition ever since. You know, these acts of genocide, they're not just left in the past, they're also happening today here in Australia. I'd like to bring your attention to the ongoing cultural genocide that's happening right here in Victoria. The Dan Andrews government is trying to destroy the sacred Jabiru birthing trees. Yeah, shame. So we all need to stand in solidarity with the Jabiru women And those trees, those birthing trees, that's women's business. That's for the Japurung women to look after and protect for their future generations. And some of those trees are over 800 years old. Why don't they have heritage protection status? How old is Fed Square? What, one decade, two? Two? This square, this concrete and brick monstrosity, has heritage protection status. That is shameful. We can't, there's no way that we can ever truly achieve peaceful foreign policy without confronting our colonial past and the acts of genocide that have happened and been ignored, and the acts that are happening now that are also being ignored. You know, we need people to step up to learn about our past, to learn about the history. We need truth. We need justice. We need solidarity. Or else, you know, there's no way we can achieve a peaceful future if we don't recognise the horrible acts of the past. They're just going to repeat themselves until we actually look at them in the face and acknowledge them for what they are. So thanks, IPAN, for hosting this rally today. Thanks, everyone, for coming along. And thank you for letting me speak.
Thanks for coming along. It's fantastic. We mightn't be many of us, but thank God we're here. God bless us all, because what we're asking for is a better world. We could all go shopping, or we could all go to the footy. We'll probably go to the footy after. But spending time out for people who have that and having empathy for people who are suffering and for doing it hard is a wonderful human trait. And unfortunately, in this neoliberal society, it's all about how much money have I got and how can I get more and how can I stab my mate in the back about getting more off him too. All these horrible television shows on TV, they're not about working together and helping each other. And that's the best way that humanity works together, how we progress. We need that peace. We need those 17 sustainable goals, the eradication of poverty, education for everyone, meaningful work to do, a sustainable system of agriculture and energy that we can all work together to make this world more beautiful than what it is. Unfortunately, the ones who control this world, it's a sad fact, are evil bastards. And they couldn't give a continental about the people of the USA or any more about the people of Afghanistan or the Philippines or anywhere else in the world either. We need to actually take control of what's going on. We need to step up to the mark and make this world better. It can be more beautiful than what it is, and it's meant to be that way. Okay? Thanks very much for coming. You're welcome to join IPAN, Independent Peaceful Australian Network. You're welcome to join Spirit of Eureka and the International League of People Struggles. Let's work together about having a harmonious world where we can live in peace and make real progress for humanity by having deeper relationships with each other and striving to achieve worthwhile goals.
And that brings us to the end of the speeches from the Climate Crisis and War Rally. It was held on Saturday, 21st of September, by the Independent and Peaceful Australian Network. And to find out more about IPAN, you can go to ipan.org.au. And thanks so much to the speakers we heard from today, Alexia Fuentes, O'Neill Waromi, Patrick Newbold, Len Cooper, Bryder Nichols, and MC Kevin Bracken. And the music heard on today's show was Biak Mios Karu by the Black Sisters from the album Peace, Love, Merdeka. Swarusen ayena be sramanaek arafabie nafana nai rayaburi arawa yaswaraum yos befanaya yaswaraum siman befaduaya rasoyakaberu.